Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang. As you can see, I'm tripping over my words because I'm so excited about the topic today. It's a very interesting topic, if I may say so, because this is one among the many, many, many different facets of the divine diamond that Bhagwan is. Like a diamond which has no color, it's transparent, it lets everything go through, and yet when we look at the diamond, we are able to see all the possible colors that we can ever imagine. That is the magic of a diamond, and that's how Bhagwan is. Bhagwan is Gunatita, he is beyond qualities, he is beyond attributes. And yet, when we look at him, we find him as an amalgamation of so many attributes. It's so fascinating, it's so fantastic. That is precisely the reason why the Lord takes a form, a human form, comes down as an avatar, so that we are able to enjoy these divine qualities. And when we look at the diamond that our Bhagwan is, one beautiful facet that is seen is of him. Well, I think I will leave that for the suspense, because it is a beautiful theme that we have taken today. It is an exciting theme, and we hope that you will also enjoy that. But before we dive into that, let me offer our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of beloved Bhagwan and welcome Brother Prem to this session. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and Sairam to all our listeners. Yes, indeed, it's a very interesting topic that we've taken, because it is a little counterintuitive, if I could say that. Mm-hmm. Because as you beautifully narrated, you know, whenever we talk about Swami, we speak of him as Gunatita, you know, Bhavatita, which means he's beyond feelings, he's beyond any attributes, he's beyond likes and dislikes, because those are attributes that you associate with human beings or beings which are much lesser. But to say that God, who is absolute, and we are going to talk of him in a certain manner, which might appear that, no, that is not how you can talk of God. But there is a reason why he does that. There is a reason why, just like how Swami would say, the formless adorns a form, the attributeless adorns this attribute. And there is a very, very important reason why he does that. But without keeping the suspense too much more longer, we'll probably speak about or mention what is that attribute we're referring to.
You know, this idea for this topic or theme got triggered by listening to one of our Radio Sai's popular series that was carried out during the Ganesh Chaturthi festival last year.
Okay.
You know, my moment with Ganesha, right, that was done. And in that, Sai Surendranath sir, a teacher in our higher secondary school, he mentioned something which triggered so many memories and, what can I say, so many feelings. And what he said was, Swami is very, very different, you know, in quotes, different during Dasara, during Shivratri, during Ganesh Chaturthi, during all these festivals which are dedicated to one particular form of the Godhead. And he said that, you know, during Shivratri, he is like the Rudra, you better keep your distance, keep away. Similarly, during Dasara, it's like the Durga Devi, and we keep our distance. Like that Ganesh Chaturthi, every Ganesh Chaturthi, some problem crops up and we keep our distance. The way he was telling, it was almost like, you know, whenever an occasion comes for some other form of the Godhead to get all the attention, become the centerpiece, Swami is not comfortable and Swami doesn't seem to like it. And Swami, in fact, withdraws himself from the students, especially during these times. These were the thoughts that got triggered in me. And as I said, these might finally be just my opinion or your opinion, but still it's very, very interesting. And we have seen it that during these festivals, which are dedicated to different forms of the Godhead, Swami is so totally different. And it almost makes us feel that Swami is very hesitant to allow the devotion and loyalty that the students have towards him being directed towards another form, you know. That's why during Ganesh Chaturthi, I'm not in a very good mood. During Shivratri, I'm not in a good mood, because all my children are thinking about Shiva now. All my children are thinking about Ganesha now, you know. It's almost like that. That is why, dear listeners, we came up with this theme inspired with that one narration. We sat through and dived into our memory lane, dived into the memory lane of so many others, and came up with this beautiful theme which we call a possessive God. how our dear Swami is such a possessive God. And as Prem said, it's not like the possessiveness that you and me have, because everything that Swami has, even in the human form, is there with a reason. And as we go through this satsang, hopefully, we will celebrate Swami being so possessive of all of us.
Talking about this attribute, and what we started off with by saying that God adorns these qualities which are not natural to him in a sense. If you look at it, that is what an avatar does. Going back to the idea of likes and dislikes, Swami would say that how do you define a bhogi or a person who is worldly? The person who is worldly is defined by raga and dvesha, likes and dislikes. Mm. There's something which he or she likes, there's something which one does not like. And we go after things which we like and we try as much as possible to avoid what we don't like. But this Lord who's supposed to be beyond that, you know, there's no good and bad for him. He's beyond the dualities that you associate with the world. But that Lord comes down and he pretends as though there are some things that he likes and some things he doesn't like. He pretends as though he likes if you're wearing white clothes. He pretends as though he likes a clean shaven face. Something as simple as that. And these are means by which we have an opportunity to live our life in a way we think that this is aligned to what Swami would like. It gives us an opportunity to live our lives in a way not how we would like to or what we would fancy, but even thinking, you know, it might be imaginary, as you said, it might be our own perception. But even then, we are thinking that I am doing this for Swami. And that would reach Swami. And these are attributes which God puts on to give us that opportunity. And similarly, his possessive nature is also an opportunity for us to grow in a certain manner. But nevertheless, you can say that we have seen this in Swami. That Swami would say, you know, why? Why somebody else? And in fact, we should take this to heart. We will try and as much as possible understand where it comes from. But we should also see that, yes, it is there. Because a lot of people would argue, you know, what is there? Good can be brought from anywhere. Wherever you get good devotion, wherever you get good knowledge, what is there in going and getting it from there? It is an argument which is valid, which has its own merits. But what Swami tries to do and what happens when an avatar comes is completely different. You know, I was just out of curiosity reading about when Einstein spoke about gravity. Like Newton came and said there's something called gravity, but everybody is wondering what is this gravity and why is it coming? You know, what is the source of that? If you say that the sun is pulling the earth towards it, why is it doing that? So he gives this idea of, you know, he has this concept of space-time continuum, and he says whenever there is any mass in that space-time continuum, it kind of begins to warp that space-time continuum.
Creates a depression.
A depression.
That.
You know, if you could imagine it as a net which kind of gets distorted when there is
a heavy iron ball placed on it.
Right. I feel something very similar happens when you talk of an avatar being in our presence. Some of these things are very generally true. Yes, knowledge can be got anywhere. Yes, after all, you have to be good. After all, you need to do good work. But when you have the presence of an avatar, kind of distort some of these things in favor of some stances that you can take. And that is why it is important to look at especially what we are talking of as the possessive nature of Swami.
You know, my personal experience, when my sister was getting married, I wanted to go to Bangalore to attend all those functions and celebrations, and it was a 3-day affair, but I wanted to take 4 days off.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being, on the fourth day, I actually wanted to go and see this movie, a 3D movie that had been released called The Avatar. You know, it's very famous and superb. It is a kind, it's been hailed a lot. So I was really eager to watch it. But, you know, in spite of knowing that Swami knows everything, when I told Swami that, Swami, I'm going for 4 days, Swami said, why you want 4 days? I just said, Swami, because the functions are for 4 days. And I didn't tell anything about that movie, and Swami permitted, and when I was going, I told my parents and others and friends and others that this is what happened, you know. One of my brothers, you know, he was telling me that, aha, I see, you were scared that this avatar's reaction to that avatar will be bad, you know. And that also, at that time, I remember, led to a discussion where we were talking about how Swami is so possessive and he's not ready to allow you to go behind, you know, some other god in that sense. In fact, for those who missed seeing that video where Sai Surendranath sir is narrating that Ganesh Chaturthi experience, it is very, very true that even such occasions leads to some beautiful opportunities and memories. If Swami had not done that, trust me, we would not be discussing that Ganesh Chaturthi. For instance, that Ganesh Chaturthi in the early 1980s, where Swami again was upset on a few students, and that upset mood had spread over the entire campus. You know, he just did not want to talk to the students. He did not want to see the students. In fact, Sai sir was saying that Swami said, let the students not come for darshan also. Let them be there only. Let them do all the, anyway Ganesh Chaturthi has come, let them sit and worship Ganesha in the hostel. So they were not able to come for darshan, and 2 days without darshan, somehow they were trying to plead to Swami, letters, as he says, the postal department got nice profits those days because a lot of telegrams, a lot of postage stamps on letters, and they were all sent to Bhagwan, but Swami was not yielding at all. And then came the Ganesha immersion day, usually 3 days or 5 days after installing Ganesha in Puttaparthi, the immersion ceremony takes place, and Sai sir himself says that immersion time Swami somehow breaks the ice. And even now when we look through our possessive God lens, it's like, if you're there to welcome Ganesha, I'm not there. To tell goodbye, I'll also join you. You know, it's like that. So they thought that for immersion day will be the day when the ice will be broken. And as is the practice, all the chariots and palanquins will come to the mandir and they take a pradakshina around the mandir and then go for immersion. But that year, it seemed to be a very different scenario because Swami sent word that from the hostel they can directly go to the well where they want to immerse. They need not come to the mandir at all. Oh, that is when the students realized that the matter had gone really out of hand and they needed to do something desperately to win Swami's favor, win back Swami's love and affection. And so they sent word through the elders, through the seniors, whoever is there, you know, that Swami, please let us come for pradakshina at least. And finally, Swami yielded, and Swami at that time was staying in the small room above the bhajan hall, inside the Kulwant hall only, you know, that time there was no Kulwant hall, of course, but he was staying in the mandir there. So Swami said, you can come and take pradakshina of the mandir, but I'm not going to come down, you know, I'll be in my room on top. So that is when the senior students, all of them came together, and they said that though Swami says like this, Swami will be definitely curious. So Swami will come and he'll be from some corner, he'll be definitely watching the procession. So let's keep an eye out for where Swami is. And when we spot Swami, let us secretly indicate to all of us. And then they planned something, you know. They planned something among all the students of the school and the institute. And that day when they came, as the pradakshina was going on, these spies, they were all around, you know, hiding and trying to locate where Swami is. And Swami was also very carefully hiding behind one of those pillars on top. But, you know, his bushy hair gave him away. He could not, you know, the pillar was not wide enough to block that. And once the student located it, the student ran to the mandir portico so that Swami doesn't see him. And so doesn't see him in the physical sense. So he's standing right below Swami. The concrete is separating them, and he is pointing upwards to all those who had gathered in the hall that here Swami is. And as they had planned, in one orchestrated moment, 1, 2, 3, go. Except for the students who are carrying the palanquins bearing the Ganesha idols, all the others, you know, in one single moment fell onto their knees, looking towards the direction where Swami is hiding behind that pillar. The Vedam chanting, the bhajan, everything stopped. There was absolute silence. And all of them in one voice started shouting out, sorry Swami, please Swami, come to us Swami, sorry Swami, you know. And the devotees had witnessed this for the past few days, that Swami is not talking to the students. And for them it was a loss, because when Swami doesn't talk to the students, they don't get that additional darshan, Swami coming out, walking. So they also empathized and they also started praying. All the institute professors, lecturers, everybody on their knees, and you know, it was one moment of intense devotion and prayer, the likes of which could never have been created without this drama from Bhagwan. And when that happened, you know, Swami melted. Of course, Swami melted. He came down, he interacted with all the students, he got special laddus from the South Indian canteen, distributed to all of them, and that was how that episode ended. But even as he was narrating about how Swami is so possessive of his children, it became evident that the reason for that is to build an intense focus towards Swami. And this is something I'm sure, Prem, you and me also can relate. during our student days also, whenever Swami is upset with the students, that is the time, in fact, we think more of Swami. When actually Swami is giving himself, giving namaskar, talking lovingly, we tend to take Swami a little bit for granted maybe. But when Swami is upset with us, we do so many things. Some students go to the extremes of doing a fast, a Thursday fast, while some others try to, you know, they try to do extra bhajans, extra meditation. Basically, what happens is whatever activity is happening in the hostel, the sole goal of that activity becomes, let Swami be happy with this. I don't want anything from this. I just want Swami to be happy with this. Happy from this. Let me do my dispensary job nicely. And if 2-3 brothers are feeling good, let that punyam go towards making Swami happy. You know, somehow the sole goal and focus becomes Swami. And it is very easy to spot it. That is possibly one of the main reasons why Swami would do that as well. So that all the focus comes back onto Bhagwan and we experience a kind of inexplicable and beautiful joy when the ice finally breaks and Bhagwan's heart, in quotes, melts.
There are two aspects to it. As you're saying, the other thing is about we having the focus on Swami. But the thing which we started off with is Swami being possessive about people praying to him and not the other deities. It is not to misunderstand in the sense that, you know, Swami wants everybody to focus on him. But as you rightly put, it is for that focus which benefits us. Going back to that Ganesha thing, the other one more old student was narrating how he was a very devout follower of Ganesha and was very fond of Ganesha when he became a student of Swami. And he saw that everybody would go up to Swami with pictures and Swami would sign that. So the first time when he had the opportunity, he took a picture of Ganesha to Swami. And Swami looked at it and he said, "You want me to sign this? You know, when I am in front of you, why you want to pray to this fellow?" Almost like that. And you know, as a young student, he thought that maybe Swami got offended. So the next day or the day, a couple of days after that, he went with a picture of Swami and that Swami very happily signed. You know, it might appear different if you don't understand the reason behind that. The other occasion, I mean, we are talking about Ganesha and probably Subramanya and other deities. Swami would do that even when you're talking about Shirdi Baba, right? And I think we must have mentioned this before. There was one of our seniors who was right now working in the ashram. He was saying that in his first few years, the first few days after he became a student of Swami, one day Swami walks up to him and Swami asks him, "Hey, do you like the old man or do you like the young man?" So he said, "What is this old man, young man?" And Swami repeated it 2-3 times. "Do you like the old man or do you like the young man?" So he said, "Okay, I don't understand what this is. Let me take a wild guess." So he said, "Swami, young man." And Swami gave a very bright smile and Swami said, "Good boy," and walked away. Then he asked some of his boys sitting around him, he said, "What is this old man, young man?" And they told him, "Thank God you said young man, because Swami refers to Shirdi Baba as the old man." And Swami is asking, "Do you like Shirdi Baba? Do you like me?" And you said young man, which is the right answer to give. And on multiple occasions, you know, when one of our lecturers was saying that one Swami had called all the primary school teachers for what you call a PC session.
A Purnachandra auditory
session. Just like how we have a Trai session, sometimes Swami would call the students or the teachers to the Purnachandra hall and Swami would spend time exclusively with them. So on that occasion, apparently many of the teachers were kneeling down with Shirdi Satcharitra for Swami to bless. Right? I mean, of course, it is a good sadhana to do that, Shirdi Satcharitra. And Swami was blessing their books. But after some time, Swami said, "What is this pichi? All of you are reading his story. Sitting here, you're reading his story." But if you look at it from the point of view of the sadhana that we are supposed to do, right? In Swami's Dhyanavahini, Swami says that we spoke about it a little when we were talking about meditation too. You know, there are these three stages through which you worship the Lord. Which is the
concentration,
contemplation, and meditation. And Swami would often say that when you sit down and what you're doing is at best only japa, and it is a form of concentration, it is not yet even contemplation, forget about meditation. And Swami would often say that for a devotee, when you are having devotion to the Lord, to one particular form of the Lord, very easily that love will take you to that stage of contemplation without even any effort. if I want to concentrate on something, if you give me some mantra or something and you ask me to concentrate on that, or you say concentrate on the tip of your nose,
and I don't have any emotion associated.
If I don't have any emotion, it will take a lot of effort to draw all my attention and place it on that place. But now when I'm sitting and thinking of Swami, that contemplation becomes so easy. I can, you know, just what you were describing, it's so easy to contemplate. You can literally figure that, you know, imagine that scene happening in front of you. That contemplation happens so easily, and Swami would say that is just one step below meditation. And when you lose yourself in that contemplation and forget your, you know, time and space and where you are and who you are, that becomes meditation. And Swami would say that, you know, if you keep thinking of all these different forms, though all forms are the same divinity, you're, you know, that purpose of from multi-pointedness to one-pointedness, which is what contemplation is supposed to do, you lose out on that. You know, that's the whole point of trying to focus on one form. Like,
you know, like when you say this, Swami has given the other analogy also. If you dig deep in one place, wherever you may be digging, you're sure to find water, because there's water all around the earth under the land. But instead of digging 200 feet in one place, if I dig 20 feet in 10 places, yes, I have dug totally 200 feet only. In one case, I'll get a well which gives me sweet water. In the other case, I'll end up with 20 ditches, you know, or 10 ditches. That's what it is when I divert my loyalty and attention and focus to multiple names and forms of God. For a sadhaka, it is beneficial. See, once I reach the state of Advaita, once I reach the ultimate state, then it doesn't matter whether it is Sai Baba or whether it's a book, whether it's a chair. But till then, we have to be loyal to that name and form. And as you clearly said it, that is what Swami encouraged. That's why he was possessive. Because it's not just about him. When that is the case, you know, Swami has given so many people chains or ring in which the pendant or in which the embossed figure is of Ganesha. If he was so much against Ganesha, why would he do that? Forget giving that to Swami Amrutananda. He gave darshan as a Ganesha. You know, Swami is giving him darshan as Ganesha. And if we look at that, even Seshagiri Rao, the first priest of Swami's mandir, was granted darshan as Lord Shiva. And we know the episode of how Swami gave the students the darshan of Dattatreya. Definitely doesn't look like a person who is keeping out competition, right? Because he himself is granting darshan as all this. It's almost like if you have held on and worshipped Ganesha all your life, you need not change over to Satya Sai also. That way also Swami has done. So it is not the case of Swami being jealous of the other gods. It's about this case, that having given your love and devotion to one form and name, till you achieve that water, till you are able to slake your thirst with that water of prema, divine prema that you will achieve, till then keep digging there only. That is why even, you know, like the humans that we are, we think that if Swami says, no, don't worship Dattatreya or Ganesha, it's understandable. But come on, Swami, what about Shirdi Baba? You know, we feel almost like that. We feel it's like a hierarchy of distances. Shirdi Baba is close to Swami. He is Swami only. So Shirdi Baba, no problem. Ganesha and all are far, like, you know. It's not like that. It's about the focus. In fact, that is why, was it Gokak? Mr. Vinayak Gokak, who was Dr. Gokak, who was invited to be head the Sai Samaj, which is the organization for Shirdi Sai. And he readily agreed and accepted that, thinking that after all it is Swami only. So in a very casual manner, he mentioned it to Swami, saying that, Swami, they have asked me to head Sai Samaj, and I have agreed, you know. He thought Swami will be pleased with that. Swami told him, very happy, if you want you can do that, but please quit from your official roles in the Satya Sai organization. Or, you know, he was at that time the vice chancellor. Right. Or maybe it was before that, whatever he whatever position he held in the Satya Sai organization, in the Satya Sai trust, Swami told him, you quit from that. And I'm sure he was bewildered. Swami said that, see, from a spiritual perspective, all are one. Not only Shirdi Baba, Satya Sai, everything, Shiva, Jesus, everything is one. But you are now working in a place for which this, you know, Swami pointing to himself said, this name and form has been given. And that Shirdi Baba, all said and done, is a different name and form. And therefore, it is not right for you to be associated with both. If you wish to go there, definitely go there. But give up this over here. And in a modern parlance, if you can see, you know, as a consumer, you are allowed to have any kind of phone, you know, any kind of phone. You can have a Motorola phone, an Apple phone, a Google phone, whatever phone. But everybody knows that there is a benefit of staying loyal to one brand. You get different kind of benefits, multiple benefits, sticking to one brand. More so if you're an employee. If you're an employee at Samsung, say, you cannot simply go over and say, I am taking a vacation of 10 days from Samsung, but I'll go and work in an Apple factory, Apple place, because I love iPhone also. You can't. It's a contract. It's like a contractual agreement. In the same way, I feel when we are just testing the waters, we are just getting drawn towards the divine and we are exploring options, you're allowed. You try out everything. Once you decide to become a devotee, once you decide to become a disciple, or, you know, you decide to dedicate your life to one name and form, it's almost like a contractual obligation that you be loyal to that name and form. The only difference is, in a worldly contract, it's beneficial for the company, and it harms the company if you break the contract. That's why they will kick you out. But in this divine contract, it is beneficial for our own spiritual growth, for our own spiritual progress. And that is why we need to abide by that. And that is why our dear Swami is so possessive.
And absolutely. It's just that the benefit from our end is so immense in that process. I mean, again, what we started off with, there is no likes and dislikes for Swami. There's nothing like, oh, you, I don't like you doing this, I don't like you worshipping that form. That also is something which he pretends, that so that we say, okay, focusing like this on Swami, Swami likes it, so I will do it. Because if Swami says that it is good for you, we may or may not listen to it. But when we, in that devotion, in the process of devotion, when Swami says, I like it this way, then there are chances that some of us might say, okay, if Swami likes it this way, then I will do it.
Because if I do it, I may get an interview, I may right. get a Pad Namaskar.
And in fact, this is about different deities. Professor Nanjundia used to say that he had this habit whenever he would write letters to Swami, it would be, contextual. If it's Guru Purnima, he would write, oh, my Sai Sadguru. If it is Shivratri, he would say, oh, Sai Shiva. Like that, he would write. And, you know, one day Swami called him and said, Swami asked him, why you keep changing your relationship with me? Right? Why do you keep changing it like that? If Dashara. So he said, yes, Swami, I feel like that. You know, if it's Dashara time, I feel you're the, Jagan Mata. If it's Shivratri, I feel you're Lord Shiva. So I put it like that. Swami said, not required. Hold any one form of relationship with me. So Swami asked, what is that one form that you relate, what is one relationship in which you are able to connect with Swami, he asked. And he said, Swami, I feel that you're my mother. Swami said, good, keep that relationship and stick to that relationship. See, even from that point of view of not only different deities, even with Swami, Swami was saying, find a way by which you connect to me and hold on to that way. If you feel that I'm your best friend, hold on to that. Mm. If you feel I'm your divine father, hold on to that. It all comes back to that, you know, that focus helps us in progressing in this. And that is one of the main reasons why Swami exhibits this quality. I think we'll take a quick break here, dear listeners. Don't go away, because there are a lot more stories we would like to narrate in the same direction in which we've taken. But we'll take a short break now, and when you come back, we'll continue with this satsang.
ਜਾਣਿਆ ਹਾਣਿਆ ਮੇਰਵਾ ਵੇ ਮੈਂ ਦੁੱਖ ਸੁੱਖ ਤੇਰੇ ਨਾਲ ਭੋਲਣਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਿਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਮੇਰਾ ਢੋਲਣਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਿਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਮੇਰਾ ਢੋਲਣਾ ਬਿਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਮੇਰਾ ਢੋਲਣਾ ਬਿਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਮੇਰਾ ਢੋਲਣਾ ਜਾਣਿਆ ਹਾਣਿਆ ਮੇਰੇ ਮਾਂਝਣਾ ਵੇ ਮੈਂ ਦੁੱਖ ਸੁੱਖ ਤੇਰੇ ਨਾਲ ਬੋਲਣਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਿਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਮੇਰਾ ਢੋਲਣਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਿਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਮੇਰਾ ਢੋਲਣਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਿਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਮੇਰਾ ਢੋਲਣਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਿਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਮੇਰਾ ਢੋਲਣਾ
तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना। खबर तू इस करना है बेपरवाइया हो कीते वादे कसमां तैनू याद कभी ना आया ये गिला प्यार दा खोल आंसू जरा प्यास नैना तो कर मेहरबान तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना। काले बदलां तो सीने विच अग लागे लंघ गईयां कई बरसातां हो, कुछ काले बदलां तो सीने विच अग लागे लंघ गईयां कई बरसातां हो, तुर गियो सजना नींदरा खोके जाग के कटियां राता अभी जाना सता वास्ता प्यार दा ये रुता सोनिया मुड़ नहीं हाड़िया। तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, तेरे बिन नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना। जानिया हानिया मेरे मां हरिया वे मैं दुख सुख तेरे नाल पोलना, तेरे बिन लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, फिर भी नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, फिर भी नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना, फिर भी नहीं लगदा दिल मेरा ढोलना।
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our interesting and in quotes eyebrow-raising topic, A Possessive God. You know, it is said that ultimately when death comes, what matters is not your wealth, not your influence, not your friends, nothing. And it is said that we must spend our life trying to earn that which matters when death comes. And for us who have been initiated into Swami, into Swami's teachings, we know that ultimately it's God alone who matters. Swami alone who matters after death. So when that is the known truth, doesn't it make sense that when we have life, we try to get that intensity and get that focus right? Because, you know, Swami has said that your final moment before death, what you think of is what determines your next birth. If you're able to think of God in the final moment of dying, you get liberated. But that is the marketer in Swami, I think, the advertiser in Swami, who is advertising and saying it's so simple. Just before you die, you have to think of God. But, you know, it is so difficult because, as we have said it time and again, it's like saying it's very simple to win the Olympic 100 meter sprint. You just have to run at top speed for 10 seconds. That's all. But to run at that speed for 10 seconds, we need a lifetime of practice. We need to practice and day in and day out, and slog, sweat and blood has to go to that. It is like that even in this. We don't know the circumstances in which we will be leaving our body, in which we will be dying. To be able to think of God, you know, when we think of the father of the nation for India, Mahatma Gandhiji, you know, in a crowd where there are thousands of people and you are going to attend a meeting, a prayer meeting, and out of the blue somebody comes and shouts at you and shoots two, three bullets into your heart, into your chest. You know, you can think of the confusion that can arise in the mind, the fear that can come, the anger. So many things will happen. But even in that moment, in those fraction, in those few seconds possibly when he had life, he managed to cry out, "Hey Ram, Hey Ram." He managed to take the name of God. And that is possible surely because of a lifetime of practice. Unless you have taken Lord Ram's name throughout your life, you won't be able to think of God at the when the last moment comes. Now just imagine if you have spent your life taking 45 names, Rama, Krishna, Shiva, Govinda, all these, then you know you won't have time to decide in your last moment what to take. That is the reason why this focus is so essential. And you know, I am reminded of a very humorous episode that was narrated by Sri Chidambara Krishnan. Chidambara Krishnan was one of those devotees who came early when I think 50s or 60s?
1960s.
And that was the time when Swami was like a college friend to many of these devotees, and they have had some phenomenal experiences. One experience he recalls is when they all persuaded Swami to travel along with them to Kodaikanal. Of course, now we have Sai Shruti, we have an ashram in Kodaikanal, but those days there was nothing. And so I think Chidambara Krishnan himself was hosting Bhagwan at his bungalow or house at Kodaikanal, and it was just Swami with 5-6 others. I think Chidambara Krishnan, was it Raja Reddy? Yes.
Right, I think
a few others were there with Swami.
I think in one thri session Swami spoke about this trip.
Uh-huh.
And in the time when he wore that handkerchief over his head, and he said, "I used to wear it like this."
Oh, because it
right.
used to
even
be.
Even in Kodai, Swami had done that, and you know, Chidambaram Krishnan was saying that they had stopped at one marketplace and they actually went shopping with Swami on the marketplace. And Swami was saying that, no, this, you know, in Venkatgiri, we are having this, some conference was coming up, either Divine Life Society conference or the Veda Purusha, the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha was coming. Swami said, no, I want to buy mementos for all of them. So they went shopping on the roads and all that.
Oh, in Kodaikanal.
Right. At one point, they were in the marketplace and Swami was in the car with his scarf tied over his head. And he was saying that, you know, suddenly they went to buy something. When they came back, there was a crowd around the car. So they were wondering, you know, how did Swami get so many devotees in Kodaikanal when he's coming here for the first time? So when they went near, they realized that people thought that Vaijayanti Mala had come, the famous actress of that time. And, you know, and Swami was saying this in Thrai. Swami said, you know, people thought I'm Vaijayanti Mala, and they came to peep into the car.
And we have heard Swami narrating in a similar fashion about him going to even Marina Beach in Madras in the early years.
Okay.
Because Marina Beach was frequented by many stars.
Right.
All the more reason why people would mistake Swami to be also a cine star. They didn't realize that he's a superstar, a star beyond all stars, you know. Very interestingly, you know, I was just thinking that those were the days when people would go to see film stars on the Marina Beach, and they happened to see Swami. And then came those days when people would come to see Swami and they would see film stars lined up, you know, because not only film stars, political stars, business stars, everybody. So these were the early days when blessed were those few who were able to recognize the divinity in Bhagwan and hold on to him and be with him and enjoy these moments. So Chidambara Krishnan, when they landed at their home, though they had recognized the divinity in Bhagwan and accepted him as their Lord, because of the effect of Maya, which all of us have experienced, even in the 1990s, even in 2000s, there were moments when we would forget in whose presence we are because of that Maya. It's that same Maya in action, wherein, you know, one night they saw that as one evening when food was being cooked, Swami walks into the kitchen, picks up a handful of chilies, gives it to the cook and says, "You're making rasam, right? Add this in the rasam." And everybody is wondering, who adds those many chilies in the rasam? But Swami has said it, so it was okay, and that rasam was made. That night, none of them are able to even, you know, touch that rasam to their tongue. It is so spicy. But Swami seems to be relishing it and eating it. You know, it is said that people from Andhra usually like spicy food, hot food. But even for an Andhra person, this was like a limit, because so many chilies have gone into that rasam. So somehow they ate it, and you know what happens when you have food that is so spicy, your stomach gets upset, you know, you get diarrheal cramps, all this happens, and they suffered that night. To their horror, the next evening also, after they have gone around Kodaikanal, done different things, when they return back home, Swami walks to the cook, picks up a handful of chilies and says, to today's rasam, add these chilies. Now at this point in time, one of the members of this troop, I think it was Raja Reddy sir, he walks to the cook and he says, "No, don't add so many." Takes away half the chilies and says, "That much you add, it's enough." And that is added to the rasam that night. And as they sit for dinner and they're having dinner, Swami says, "There is no spice in the rasam." He calls the cook and he says, "Didn't you add the chilies that I gave you?" Now the cook is silent. He doesn't want to let the cat out of the bag. He doesn't want to be the person who is blaming that, "Swami, I wanted to do, but that person came." So they're silent. Everybody is silent. And Swami understands that, in a physical way, he understands that the chilies have not been added. So he lets go of it. The next day evening, again walks into the kitchen, takes a handful of chilies and gives it to the cook and says, "Add this in the rasam today." You know, there are multiple types of rasams that are made in South India. Rasam is a kind of I don't know what is the English translation, lentil soup, you know, whatever. You add it to rice and you eat it. So when this was given, again the person goes, takes away half the chilies and says, "Hey, don't add that many. This itself was spicy enough last night. This much is enough." This person says, "See, Swami was upset." He says, "No, you don't worry. You add only this much." That's what is done. That evening again, that night when they're having food, now Swami eats and Swami stops eating. Swami says, why was the chilies not added? You're not added. Call the cook, takes him to task. The cook still doesn't reveal the name. Swami says, "I don't want to have food." He washes his hand and walks out of the bungalow. And as Chidambara Krishnan narrated, Swami walked out of the main door, walked out of the compound and sat on the compound wall facing outside. You know, it's like, "I don't want even to look at this house." And Swami is sitting there all by himself. And all of these others thought, "Oh my God, what have we done? Now we have upset Swami. That's it." You know, an entire trip gets ruined if Swami is upset. And I'm sure that multiple batches of students who went either to Kodaikanal or any other place touring with Swami will know that when you go out on a tour with Swami, it's so good that Swami is in a good mood. Otherwise, the tour is wasted. You know, you have gone for a Kodai trip, but you have not experienced anything in Kodaikanal because Swami is in an upset mood. So that held, it was amazing to know that it held true even in those early days back then. So all of them form a plan and they go, and you know, it's almost a scene outside the compound wall. All of them are weeping, crying, apologizing, telling Swami, "Please come back. And when they're pleading thus for some time, Swami looks at them and says, "No, what happened? Why are you so upset? What happened? They say, "Swami, sorry, please, you, Swami, whatever you say only we'll do, Swami, nothing, please." Swami, no, past is past, leave it off. You know, Swami is so loving, Swami is so fine with everything. He says, "Yeah, let's go, why all this outside? Come, let's go in." So they are happy now, okay, it has got solved. But you know what he says? Swami walked into the kitchen, took out a handful of chilies and said, now add this much and make the rasam. And then went back. And he said that whole trip was doomed. You either had to have a spicy rasam or a spicy swami. We wanted a sweet swami, so we withstood the spicy rasam by eating curds after that or something like that. You know, this was a leela, if you can call so, of Bhagwan during the early 1960s or late 1950s. And if we look at this incident today, it's almost like, why have you come to Kodaikanal? Have you come to enjoy food? Go enjoy food then. Have you come to enjoy the scenery? Go enjoy the scenery then. And when Swami actually asks this question through his actions, it becomes clear to everybody that no, Swami, we have come here for you. Because if you are not happy, it doesn't matter if it's Kodaikanal, if it's the Himalayas, if it's some foreign country, nothing matters. We want you to be happy. It's almost like Swami saying, remember that always then. Because that is what should be the mantra for our life as well. In our life, whatever we do, we're doing it because we want Swami to be happy. All other things are incidental. The moment our focus shifts from Swami to what is incidental, I think that is when Swami starts becoming possessive and Swami starts, you know, in quotes, behaving like a little child. Because he wants to draw our focus back from the world and from all that is ephemeral, transient and not important, back to what is important and what is eternal and permanent. That is him.
As Swami would say, and I don't know if Swami has said it directly, but it would be narrated many times in Swami's presence, as to, it's not important that you merely live with Swami. It's important that Swami becomes the center of your life. And there's a lot of difference between that. And most of
rather
us...
Rather than being a part of your life, he should be the center
most
of your
us,
life.
What we do is we come to Swami and, yes, I mean, I think our lives are wide enough to accept one more deity, because as they say, or, I mean, I think any traditional Indian home is filled with pictures of all the deities in your puja room, and you know, you have enough space for one more god. Invariably, that's what happens when we come to Swami. In fact, there's a very beautiful incident which was narrated by one of our lecturers. One Swami comes to this person who was a visiting faculty, and Swami tells him that, you know, my 75th birthday is coming, you and your whole family come. And Swami said, I'm going to give you Vishwavirat Darshan. And this was something that Swami would often say during big festivals, because Swami would say the gathering which is coming, all of them together form the Vishwavirata. And Swami had said that, and Swami told him, Swami would rarely tell somebody, you come for my birthday or you come. But that is, in fact, would be a refrain in Swami's discourse, who invited all of you. But here was Swami specifically telling this person, you come for Swami's birthday celebrations. So he was very thrilled. He went back and, you know, he told all of his family they were planning to come. And just about a couple of weeks before Swami's birthday, one very important family member in his, close family was going to get married. Maybe, a very close family member. It was such a person that he could not avoid that function. So he was in a fix now. You know, here was Swami who had called him that Swami has to come and he has to come for this birthday, and this is a family function that he cannot avoid. So he looked at it, and you know, invariably how we would look at it is, who is more understanding among the two, right? That's how we usually make a decision in a family. So definitely Swami will understand my position better than, you know, this uncle or aunt or whoever is getting married here. So he says, all right, Swami, please forgive me. I'll go and attend this marriage. And then, you know, you will do all the reasoning in your mind. Oh, this is my duty, and this is, you know, this is what is dharma and all of that. So he said, okay, Swami, I'll go for this wedding. I'm really sorry I'm not able to make it for your birthday celebrations. That night, he has this dream in which, you know, Swami comes and Swami catches hold of his hand and takes him to a huge mansion, right? It's a huge bungalow, multiple rooms and all that. And Swami points to that mansion and Swami says, hey, you're looking at this huge building, right? Swami says, your heart is like this building. And Swami said, in this building, there are many, many rooms. Similarly, in your heart, there are many rooms. And Swami says, there's one room where your colleagues are there. There's one room where your neighbors are there. There's one room where your close family is there. There's one room where your extended family is there. And Swami said, similarly, there's one room which you've given to Swami. And Swami said, if this is the place you give to Swami, and this is what you'll get in return. Right, in the sense of, not that Swami will be upset with you, as we were explaining, but that is the benefit that you're drawing out of knowing Swami and having the fortune of knowing Swami in this lifetime. Swami says, if Swami is only a part of your life, that is the benefit you will draw out of this good fortune that you have chanced upon. If you really want to make full utilization of this, then Swami should become the center of your lives. And needless to say, he woke up, he called up that family, he said, and there's no way I'm going to come to your marriage. Swami's birthday is more important to me, and he comes off here. But, you know, this is precisely what we are trying to establish here, that Swami says, this focus is the best opportunity to, you know, when you come to know of Swami. First of all, God coming in a human form is so rare. And after he having come for you to know him, you know, whether physically you've come for darshan or not, it's a different thing. But to even have knowledge of Swami having taken an avatar as a form, Swami would say this opportunity is best utilized when you focus on him. In fact, some of the earlier students would say when this topic of meditation came, Swami had told them, I think Sonam sir was once telling us, Swami was standing there in the bhajan hall and explaining to them, you know, what meditation is there, what is there, very simple. Swami said, it's very simple. You've seen Swami. Every day you're seeing Swami come for darshan. Just close your eyes and imagine Swami from top of the hair to tip of the toe. Swami said, it's so simple. Just imagine the hair, imagine the forehead, picturize the eyes, picturize the nose. And Swami was like describing his own whole feature. And Swami said, and then you come to the shoulder. And then, zoop, you can come off to the feet.
Because
there are no distractions in between, like, you know, four hands and gada and, you know, trishula and all of that. And nothing. See, such a simple form. And Swami was saying, such a lovable form I've taken so that it is easy for you to contemplate on. You can so easily relate to this form and you can fix your mind on this form. Swami said, that is why I have come. And if you miss this opportunity, you are the one who is going to be losing out. And that is what Swami actually is always referring to. In fact, before I give it back to you, there's another very, very important incident. We must have made a mention of it multiple times, of, you know, Swami being in the interview room, and on the occasions when the students are leaving after a festival, especially after a birthday festival, where Vrindavan students would stay for about 1 month and go back to Vrindavan. And we all have seen that and been a part of that. When the when the buses would leave the ashram, just as they leave the gate, there would be that Jai Jai Kar. Everybody would shout Jai Bolo Bhagwan, and it would be so resounding. Swami could hear it in his room or in the interview room where Swami is seated. Invariably, Swami would be sitting there, and when that Jai Jai Kar comes, Swami would actually have a sunken face and would literally be choking in emotions.
He'll be feeling very sad.
And Swami would say, "My boys are going. My boys are going." And there would be a reversal of roles where the elderly devotees who were there, who were actually elderly to Swami in physical age, would be consoling Swami. Swami, it's okay, Swami, don't worry. They'll be coming back next month, or you'll be going there. Why do you have to feel so bad? So this was happening almost like repeatedly every time the boys would come and leave. At one point, apparently, Professor Kasturi lost it. He said, Swami, what is this drama you're doing, Swami? You're Lord Shiva, you're this, you're that. And how could you be crying about something like this? And it was then that Swami explained the reason behind Swami behaving like that. Swami said, see, all this while when these boys were there with me in Prashanti Nilayam, or when I am there in Vrindavan with them, I am the center of their life. All their focus is on Swami. Every time they're thinking, you know, when will Swami come out? Which window can I go and have Swami's darshan? What can I do to please Swami? You know, can I take a letter to Swami? Can I take a handkerchief to Swami? What is Swami doing? All the time their focus is on Swami. Now that they've crossed the precincts of Prashanti Nilayam, their mind will start wandering. And I'm feeling for them what a loss of opportunity it is. And in fact, that is what Swami would express in, you know, the letters which Swami would write when Swami was in Parthi and to the Vrindavan boys. Swami would constantly say, you know, are you making good use of this time? Are you concentrating on Swami? Have you changed your ways? Because that opportunity, it is like, as one of our lecturers would say, the moment when you are spending with Swami, in thinking about Swami, it is like, you know, your what progress you can make in thousands of births is given to you in a few moments. Because that is that cosmic consciousness concentrating on you when Swami comes and speaks to you, or when you are speaking to Swami in your prayers. That much power is packed into that few moments when, you know, you're concentrating on Swami. And that is why Swami was playing all of these games. The one who is, you know, when Swami's mother passed away, when Ishwaramma Garu passed away
during the summer course,
right? Swami did not even take the trouble of traveling to Prashanthi Nilayam. Swami said, you know, take her and do the needful. Right? That was the detachment which Swami had. When Swami's sister was widowed, everybody was crying. You know, Kasturi writes about that scene. He's saying, Professor Kasturi writes that I was overwhelmed seeing everybody crying there. Swami walks in as though nothing has happened. And, you know, he looks at Swami and says, Swami, are you not moved? Are you not, you know, emotional about this? Swami said, birth and death happens. What is, if, you know, if I were to, if that was to, that were to stop, what will I fill my time with? Right? That is Swami's level. But here was Swami was pretending as though, you know, I'm hurt that you're not praying to me. I'm hurt that you're praying to somebody else. Why was he doing that? It can be nothing, but that's got so much benefit for each one of us.
In fact, when you say that, I'm reminded of a very beautiful and poignant episode. But I think I'll hold myself from narrating that because we'll take a quick little break now. So dear listeners, don't go away anywhere. An awesome episode is coming up, but that will be after this break.
मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना साई मन मेरो लागे ना ते साई दर्शन के प्यासे अखियां तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले नयन कमल मन मोहक मादक रंजित है अधरारे तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले इस छवि को हम मन में भर कर तेरे गुण को गाए तेरे गुण को गाए मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे तेरे बिना जग माया काए, बंधन टूट न पाए। तेरे बिना जग माया काए, बंधन टूट न पाए। जीवन नैया पग पग डोले, जीवन नैया पग पग डोले, तू ही पार लगाए। तेरी शरण में ले के प्रभु तू कृपा शांति बरसाए, कृपा शांति बरसाए। मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे, तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी अखियां, तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी। जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे, जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना।
वेलकम बैक डियर लिसनर्स, we were speaking about how, you know, Swami feels, how he yearns, how he wants all of his children, all of his devotees, all of his disciples, whatever we may use the term, to focus on him and him alone, because that is what matters to them in life. That is what will redeem their lives. I remember an episode narrated by Brother Srinivas. Brother Srinivas was instrumental in getting so many youth from Hyderabad and Andhra Pradesh to Bhagwan's lotus feet, and he has many beautiful interactions with Swami. He was narrating about one episode where Swami had called him in for an interview, and in the interview room there are two parts. There is the general interview room and then there is a personal interview room inside. So Swami first conducts a general interview with everybody, and then one by one or two by two or group by group he takes them into the inner interview room, and then that is the place where people ask their most intensely personal questions. So the general interview got over, and Swami was now walking from the general interview room into the personal interview room, and as he was walking through, the door is narrow. You know, that's an amazing thing. If we see all of Swami's interview rooms or residence, they are all so small. You know, people think that Swami is living like a king. Actually, he is living like a prisoner. They might be beautiful gardens there, but how many times have we seen Swami walking and enjoying the gardens? Never. Because we devotees will not allow him to enjoy that, you know. Swami can't enjoy a stroll down the street because we will mob him, you know. So even in his own room, all the rooms that Swami lived in, be it in the Prashanti Mandir, the Purnachandra, or even Yajur Mandir, even the Yajur Mandir looks so big, but Swami's building is only half. The other half is not, I mean, you know, Yajur Mandir is like two buildings on either side of the Sarvadharma Stupa. But only one half is where Swami would stay. In that also the ground floor is, Swami's room is only on the first floor. You know, it is almost one-tenth the size of the entire Yajur Mandir, where Swami is actually staying. So Swami has always lived in such, you know, like Prem, you had beautifully summarized. He showed how to live when he had nothing, and he showed how to live when he had everything. And it was both were the same. You know, that is how it is. So when Swami was walking through that narrow door, Brother Srinivas was seated at that door. And in order to allow Swami space to walk in through the door, he just moved a little back. To his surprise, Swami suddenly stopped, looked at him with, you know, very angry eyes. And Swami told the people whom he was taking into the personal interview room to wait, and Swami pulled, literally holding him by the collar, Swami pulled Srinivas into the inside the personal interview room. And Swami said, "What thoughts are you getting?" He was wondering, what thoughts am I getting? That's another interesting question and an entire theme by itself, because it shows how we ourselves are not aware of what thoughts we get, you know. We just, they come and go away. And Swami, the omniscient one, knows even those passing thoughts. So he said, when Swami asked him, what thoughts are you getting? He had no idea what thought he was getting. He said, Swami, what? Nothing. At least he was sure that he did not get any thought that would warrant such a kind of angry reaction from Swami. Some thought might have passed by, but it would not have been a negative or harmful thought. Then Swami made it clear. Swami said, you want to go away from Swami? No, he was more surprised because he had not thought of going away from Swami. And then Swami said, when I was coming into the room, why did you move back? Oh, that Swami, that I just wanted to give you some space so that you can go. And then Swami, with all seriousness, told him, even for that, don't think of moving away that much from me. And Swami told him, if necessary, I will walk over you, but you don't move away from me. Understood? And he said, yes, Swami, I understand. And you know, as he narrated this episode, it is so amazing, it is so thrilling, you know, this is possessiveness to another level itself, you know. Don't even think of moving away from me to leave, allow me space to walk through. If needed, I will walk over you. And when I heard this, what struck me was, we often think that a true devotee yearns for the Lord, a true devotee yearns for God. And we possibly think that way because we have not seen the way God yearns for the devotee. And these are those instances when we get a window peep into the heart of God. And we understand what Swami means by saying, Vetakutunnanu, Vetakutunnanu. Swami has said in that poem there that I am searching for one true devotee. Yes, the devotee yearns for God, true. But it is no match to the way the Lord yearns for the devotee. And I think apart from, of course, we discussed how through this possessiveness, Swami gives us the message of focusing on Him. The other thing that we get to peep at is this intense yearning that the Lord has for the devotee. And it's so inspirational. Even to this day, though I did not experience that, just listening it from Brother Srinivas's mouth itself was so inspiring. And it feels so thrilling within that, my Swami loves me so much. I have to love Him so much more. That inspiration comes, and that is another reason I think Swami displays this trait called possessiveness, so that we get an idea of the yearning, the pining, the longing, the craving that God has for the devotee.
Whenever I used to read this shloka from the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Ananyas chintayanto ma yejana pariyupasite, that is a perfect expression of God's possessiveness. If you say, He says, Ananyas chintayantoma, don't think of anybody else and think
anything
of me,
else,
anything
huh?
else. Because that is the process which, you know, a devotee has the benefit of having. I would often think of this. Let us say that I am interested in getting the Marmagnan or, you know, Brahma Vidya, whatever it is. And I come to Swami. If I come to Swami, I am coming for that knowledge, right? So I will stay here for 20 years, 25 years. If I have not made any progress in that Brahma Vidya, I will look around who else is there who can give me that. Or even as I'm sitting here, I'll say, okay, who else can, you know, can I get few credits from somewhere else, just like how you do in your university classes.
Sorry for interrupting, Prem. You're talking of Brahma Gyan. I think many of us do that even for worldly things. I'm not getting married. I want to get a marriage and I come to Bhagwan, and if 4 years I don't, I start looking out where else I can get. I'm coming to solve my financial problems to Bhagwan, and after some time, if that is not happening, I start looking out for other gurus, other place where I can hopefully solve these problems.
Right. The reason I am talking about Brahmagnan is, it is understandable that they are artha-arthartis. You know, they have come for self-benefit. They are not devotees really. They have come for bettering their own lives. But when you talk about jnana, you think, okay, here is a spiritual person.
Correct.
You know, somebody comes and says that I want Brahmagnan. He's not an ordinary worldly devotee. He's really somebody who is after something which is so supreme. Even if you're after something such as something so supreme, you're after something which is for yourself. But when you come to Swami and when you say that, you know, Swami, I want from you, and I want only when it is from you, then what you receive from Swami actually becomes immaterial, right? even if you say that I want Brahmagnan, you say that, no, Swami, you give it to me whenever you want. I am not interested in when it comes, because I am interested only in receiving it from you. That is when, you know, when Swami talks about Karma Yoga, what does he say? He says, to do without having any eye on the results. And even when you're pursuing knowledge through devotion, it becomes like a form of Karma Yoga. When you're saying, Swami, I want Karma Yoga, but I'm not really interested in it. I'm sorry. I want Brahmagnan, but I'm not so interested in it, because now I'm interested in you. Right? And that is when even that process becomes so perfect. And that is what devotion can offer. And that is why, you know, that possessiveness of when that happens, it is almost like you don't know when you're going to transition into that phase of oneness. You're almost ready, as I often think of it, you know, when Swami says, I'm all around you, I'm above you, below you. If you were to think, how can our relationship with Swami be like that? It is like being a child in the womb of a mother. Because when you're in the mother's womb, the mother is above you, below you, all around you. And, you know, you and the mother are one in that sense. So if you really look at it that way, when does that separation happen? When the child becomes that fetus. But when you're in that stage, you're so completely dependent on that mother. You don't really have to ask, you know, give me this. Or you don't have to say, I'm feeling hungry, I'm feeling cold. Everything comes spontaneously. It's that relationship of spontaneity which happens. When you're in that state, you almost don't know when you'll transition into that oneness. And that is what is the greatest opportunity Swami offers us through this pretense that he is putting up.
Absolutely. In fact, when Swami says that I separated myself from myself to love myself, that one statement, I feel, actually supports Dvaita or Advaita. It's almost like the state of Advaita is boring. That's why Swami says, I want to love myself, but I can't love myself because it's an Advaitic state. And therefore, I separate myself from myself. And in doing that, we get the Lord and we get the devotee. That separation of myself from myself, where the devotee is yearning for the Lord and the Lord is also yearning for the devotee. That is the only reason why possibly the Lord separated himself into the Lord and devotee, because it's not one way. It's not just that the devotee is yearning for the Lord. The Lord is also yearning for the devotee. And you know, the joy that you get when you realize the yearning that the Lord has for you is so supreme. In one instance, everything else is forgotten. You know, till then you may be thinking, my Lord is not looking at me, he's not. The moment you get to know his perspective, or her perspective, or God's perspective, it all changes. I'm reminded of the one of the final scenes in the Telugu movie Annamaya. You know, Annamacharya, before he became Annamacharya the saint, composing so many kirtans in praise of Lord Venkateshwara at Tirupati. He was a normal worldly man, like any of us. And he in fact had married twice. He had two wives. And he was lost in the pleasures of the world. Once his focus started turning towards God, all other pleasures became tasteless. And his sole focus was God alone. And it is said that after a while, his kirtans were so powerful that people have gone into trance listening to his kirtans. People have felt people have felt surging love for God in their hearts listening to his kirtans. In fact, they say that some people even attained the Lord just by listening to his kirtans. Now imagine such a Annamaya. In the movie, it is so beautifully depicted. Towards the fag end of his life, he's an old man. He has aged. He's not able to walk properly. And yet, he's lost in one thought that, you know, why is it that I am not getting oneness with my Lord? Why is that I am not getting my merger? You know, just imagine listening to the kirtans that I have composed in the glory of, in out of my love for Lord, listening to that people are getting moksha and I am not getting moksha. So he decides that's it. I'm going to tell my Venkateshwara that I don't want anything. Venkatesha, please take me into you. I am tired of this. And such a beautiful kirtan also, Antaryami, Alasiti, Solasiti. I don't want to risk singing and destroying the mood. But so poignantly he sings. He says, Lord, I'm tired. I've had enough of this life. Please take this back. And he walks into the temple and he's having in his hand all his compositions. He says, I don't care for any of these compositions. I care for you, O Lord. I want to merge into you. Please come. And he stumbles. And as he's about to fall, Lord Venkatesha is there, holding him in his embrace so that he doesn't fall. And when he holds him like that and asks him, what do you want, Annamaya? Annamaya says, Lord, you are embracing me. I don't know. I never thought a moment like this will come. I've got your embrace. What else can I seek? Except for one thing, O Lord. And I don't know why I'm not getting it. Tell me, what am I lacking? Please tell me, Lord, what I'm lacking, because I want to become one with you. I can't bear this separation any longer. I want to become one with you. So tell me what I should do, O Lord. What is it that is lacking in me, because I want to do that. And that time, you know, what Venkateshwara says, you know, it's so beautiful. Lord Venkateshwara says, Annamaya, there's nothing lacking in you, Annamaya. And that is why you're not getting the merger. And he says, what do you mean, O Lord? He says, Annamaya, if you merge into me, who will sing for me, Annamaya? Who will sing for me? I am so addicted to your songs, to your kirtans. Nobody sings for me the way you sing. I love to listen to it, Annamaya. And you know, when I see that scene, even now I get tears in my eyes, because I feel this is a scene which depicts Swami's statement that I separated myself from myself so that I can love myself. And here Venkatesha says, and the moment Annamaya hears this, he says, Lord, now I don't want anything. You know, I don't want anything. That's it. The word that I'm hearing from you, that you need me, I want nothing else, O Lord. You know, that is the beauty. The beauty of that possessiveness is when you listen to your Lord expressing that you think you need me, I need you more than what you need me. You know, when you listen to that, the joy that you get, because Annamaya at that time says, now I don't want anything, O Lord. And that is when he actually gets his merger. That is when the light moves from Annamaya and the light goes and merges at the feet of Venkatesha. That's how the movie concludes. It's so beautiful, and it highlights what you just said about Ananya Chintayantoma. When your desire for the Lord is intense and ultimate, you actually don't even care for Brahmagyana or Moksha. I don't care about Brahmagyana. I don't care about Moksha. Lord, I love you and I want you. Yes, there is a path of Jnana, but Bhakti, when it reaches its purest form, it is no different from Jnana. And in that moment of devotion, with all the joy, you automatically attain what the highest of jnanis also attain. I mean, let me just tell one more episode of, which is quite popular in the life of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. It is said that he is not able to reach the ultimate stage because his love for the form of mother is coming in the way. That is when his guru comes and tells him that take a sword, and that is the sword of jnana, and chop off your mother's head. Chop it off, Ramakrishna, and you will attain the ultimate. And that's what Ramakrishna Paramahamsa does. He takes the sword and chops off the neck of the mother whom he has worshipped all his life. And in one moment, he gets Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And, you know, people often say that, see, this is what happens. Even in bhakti, you will get an obstacle. But what his guru says is what Ramakrishna Paramahamsa attained in one fraction of a second. It has taken lifetimes and years and centuries for people to achieve through jnana. His bhakti was such that it brought him to the ripe stage where, you know, it like Urva Rukameva Bandhanat Mrityor Mukshi Yamamrutat. In the Vedas it is said, like a ripe cucumber without any effort just falls off. In that way, without any effort, you just move into Nirvikalpa Samadhi. That is what we are able to achieve when we have that kind of mad love for God. And in order to encourage and, you know, help us inculcate that love, I think Swami acts like he's possessive.
And in the process, we have spoken so much about Venkateshwara and Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. But, I mean, all of this was meant to drive home the point of, you know, the great fortune that we have. I still recall when we were students, we had written a card to Swami. I mean, I don't really remember Swami's response to that card. But, you know, we had written in that, you know, Swami, we have read so much about Krishna. They say that Krishna is very beautiful. But we don't know. For us, beauty's definition is you. We have heard that, you know, his flute was so melodious. I think it was for a Janmashtami card. But we don't know. We've never heard that. We've only heard your voice, and for us, nothing is more sweet than that. And that is the opportunity that we have, you know, when after coming to Swami, it is like, it's a chance can't be described. One in a million, one in a billion, one in a trillion, we don't know. And Swami would say that it's just, Swami is telling a group of students, don't think that you've done something which has brought you to my feet. It's just that I have come and you are also here, and it's a chance meeting, almost like Swami was putting it like that. It's like, yes, you've done good and you got a human birth and it has coincided with the avatar's lifetime. And you've come to know of the Lord. And that is an opportunity that you've got. Don't misuse it. Don't think that, you know, you're a great sage who has got this opportunity as a reward for what you've done. This is an opportunity which you can now capitalize. And how to do that is, Swami says, make him the focus of everything. Don't let him be just a part of your life. Make him the center of your life, not only center of your life, then make him your life itself. So I think that is the conclusion of what we thought of saying as Swami, as the possessive God. Not because he needs us that he needs to be possessive. We need him, so we are grateful that he is possessive.
So rather than an expression of selfishness that possessiveness often indicates, as every attribute of the Lord, Swami's possessiveness too is an expression of his selflessness, of his divine love. Grateful to Swami for that divine love, we'll bring this satsang to a close by offering it at his lotus feet. We'll end with a song, on the other side of which, as always, you'll be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Baba, take me away. Sai Baba, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Baba, take me away. Sai Baba, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Baba, take me away. Sai Baba, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Swami, take me away. Oh, Swami, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Swami, take me away. Oh, Swami, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Baba, take me away. away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while.